Now, energy is a fundamental indicator of how well your economy is doing. Prime Minister's vision of India is a very bold and a very ambitious blueprint. I think the Modi government thinks better. Today, we've all become victims of technology. Politics brings a larger canvas, that's all. Our Russian Federation cooperation has been exceptionally important. He said, you're buying so much. I said, well, I buy from whoever sells me at the most competitive price.
Why does it bother the rest of the world?
I don't think it does.
Hello and welcome. My name is Anupam Kher. Welcome to my show where for the next half an hour, we will discuss all things India, Bharat, with a very special guest. He's a seasoned diplomat and a prominent politician who served as India's permanent representative to United Nations and held four ministerial positions. Today, he's serving as India's Minister of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Welcome, Hardeep Puri ji.
Thank you. Hardeep Puri was born in Delhi in 1952. He got his master's in history from Delhi University and joined India's Foreign Service in 1974. During his remarkable diplomatic career, he has served as Joint Secretary to the Government of India in the Ministry of External Affairs and Ambassador to Brazil. Hardeep Puri also served as India's permanent representative to the UN in Geneva and in New York. He joined the BJP in 2013 and was first appointed Minister of Housing and Urban Affairs in just 4 years' time. From 2019 to 2021, he held three ministerial positions at the same time. He is currently serving as Minister of Petroleum and Natural Gas.
Thank you. It's an honor to speak to you. I met you in New York, and now we are here chatting about life. You come from a diplomat family. Was this a very natural choice that you made to get into this?
I don't think I ever exercised a choice, as it were, in terms of career. I wanted to be a diplomat because my father was in the Ministry of External Affairs. So that's a life I was born into. As a four-year-old child, I accompanied my father when he went on his first posting to Bonn in Germany. When I was 16 years old and joined Delhi University, I was exposed to student politics. I flirted with both the left and the right, as we understand it in normal language.
Yes.
I was elected student leader in 1971. So after I finished my diplomatic career of 39 years, it's not that I exercised a choice. It was almost a natural drift into the next phase of my life, which was the BJP. I had made my intentions very clear. There was, in fact, an instance in 2008 when I just come back from Brazil, where I was ambassador, and I was secretary in Delhi, and I wanted to consider joining politics even then. I remember I went to the then leadership of the party and expressed an interest in contesting the 2009 elections from Delhi. The party, for whatever reason, very difficult to say with the benefit of hindsight, they decided not to give me a ticket. That was a good thing. Then I went on to New York, where I became permanent representative, and I had the privilege of presiding over the Security Council because India was elected to the Council in 2011 and 12. And I remember when UN Women was established, my very distinguished host was one of the first he for she's who was appointed.
I was appointed the brand ambassador.
Ambassador also. So it was a very fulfilling nearly 5 years in New York. But when I came back in 2013, what I had wanted to do earlier almost fell into slot. Again, in 2014, I wanted a ticket to fight the Lok Sabha election. Well, the party did not find it. They didn't give me a ticket, but I didn't also lobby for it. I just expressed a concern. But then before I knew what was happening, I was appointed to the Council of Ministers in 2017, and it's been nearly 7 years plus.
What is the main difference between being a diplomat and a politician? Because Prime Minister Modi in his cabinet has unbelievably brilliant diplomats turned into ministers. And it speaks about his acumen also to choose such learned people. But what is the difference between...
Well, I don't know, and I perhaps have not been able to find the answer.
Hmm.
I agonize about this. I use the word agonize carefully, not just interest. I agonize about it. What makes a person able to navigate?
Hmm.
I mean, a diplomat is just a characterization.
Hmm.
But I think whether you're a civil servant or you're an academic or you are, if I may respectfully submit, a highly successful person in the world of, in the creative world of cinema, there is some streak there which is a fundamental requirement, which is to be able to get on with people, put your point of view across, set the narrative, reach out to your audience. That's part of diplomacy, but that's also part of politics. I mean, I was reminded when I was very young as a civil servant, and we lost a very senior civil servant. And he said, you know, that man knew how to navigate. When he sat with politicians, he could use his skills as a civil servant and as a diplomat to talk to them. And yet when he was with the diehard bureaucrats, he could also use his skills as a politician to navigate through. So I think these are interchangeable. These are all facets of the same personality. It's true, some people never make the transition.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
No, some people. But I think if you've been in any profession for 39 years, as I was, surely there must have been something that you learned by way of knowing how to relate to people, knowing how that. And the world of politics brings a larger canvas, that's all. I mean, as a diplomat, you are accredited from one country to another, or if you are in the UN, you are dealing with the member states. But political canvas is much larger. So I think it also provides good training ground.
Prime Minister Modi says India can become energy independent by 2047. How do we get there?
I think the Prime Minister's vision of India, he's a very bold and a very ambitious blueprint, because he also wants India to be a developed country by 2047.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about is India with an economy of $25 trillion as against your $4 trillion now. Now, energy is a fundamental indicator of how well your economy is doing.
Mm.
Anupam ji, if you ask anyone a question, are any countries consumption figures on energy rising? Are they declining? Are they stable? It'll give you a fairly good idea of how the economy is. In India today, our indices show rapid consumption increase. I don't want to startle you with facts, but we are today consuming 5 million barrels of crude oil in a day, which is going into a refinery. 5 million barrels in a day.
Right.
This was a figure till about a few days ago. Yesterday or day before, I had to appear on a show like this, and I did my homework, and the figure had come up to 5.33 million. That is, you know, it's a massive haul. We are going to, in the next few year or two, look at an Indian crude oil consumption of 6 million barrels per day plus.
Wow.
Plus, in the next two decades, next 20 years, 25% of the increase in global demand is going to come from India. So your question is a very specific, pointed question, and I apologize for giving you a long-winded answer. It will come from several things. One, a massive increase in exploration and production. What happened is, for a long period, we just thought that if crude oil is available at reasonable rates all over the world, why do you want to do exploration and production? Even when I joined this ministry 3 years ago, a lot of people in well-placed said, okay, why do you want to import, why do you want to spend money on prospecting? But no, I think the Modi government thinks better, and we have released, out of the 3.5 million square kilometers of sedimentary basin that we have, 1 million square kilometers, which was no-go area, has been released for prospecting. We've taken all the data and put it on a repository in the University of Texas. All the major oil companies in the world are now coming and wanting to invest here. The earlier attitude was, you know, you come, invest, and if we find the oil, then we assert a sovereign right. This is ours. So the investor will say, why should I come and waste? Now we are willing to incentivize the investor coming, and we are willing to even co-finance the operation to look for it. We are going into biofuels in a very big way. When Mr. Modi assumed responsibility, our total biofuel blending in our energy mix was 1.4% or thereabouts. Today we are doing 15% blending. Last month we did 15%. We had a target of 20% by 2030. We're going to do it by 2025. We're going to go into green hydrogen in a big way. But having said all this, it's my understanding that at least for 20 years from now, we will also be dependent on fossil fuels, which is, I mean, the current time, if you are doing 5.33 million barrels a day, it will go up to even 7 or thereabout. Is it going to be all done domestically? Domestic production will go up. Rest will be imported. And the Atmanirbharta, or the self-sufficiency, is that you will not be dependent on external sources. Now, one good thing that has happened is that because you're a large buyer, it also gives you some leverage in terms of how much you buy, at what price you buy, etc. I think the 2047 energy self-sufficiency coming from solar, big way, green hydrogen. Like, I think green hydrogen is the fuel of the future. Right. Now, what do you need to get green hydrogen? You need to be able to use clean energy at a reasonable price, that is solar. We've already demonstrated that from 25 cents a unit, we brought the price of solar down to 3 cents a unit. Mm. And then you need an electrolyzer. We put that under the PLI scheme. So today, I would say that all our estimates of green hydrogen for the next 5 years, 6 years, 2030, are underestimates. I see green hydrogen exploding. I see biofuels with a 20% target. I see that going to 30%, 40% and more. So your energy will be interesting. You will be able to solve your agricultural problem. After all, when we did 10% blending, we gave our farmers 41,400 crores because we saved that money due to imports. Now, when you do 20% blending, depending on the global prices, you'll give your farmers more. Today, your biofuels, ethanol feed is coming from sugar cane, it's coming from maize, it's coming from broken food grain, it's coming from agricultural waste. So the self-sufficient energy India, Bharat, that the Prime Minister envisages, it's a large canvas including all this.
What is it that you think is right now happening in Bharat that is making Bharat so vibrant?
I think what is happening in Bharat is something which is a combination, if I may submit, of three factors. We've gone from being apologetic about our developmental space. We were underdeveloped. People wanted to characterize us as poor. And there's something remarkable that has happened is that the boss, the Honorable Prime Minister, has instilled in us a pride in our historical and civilizational past as a thing to set with. And I think he believes that it's only countries which have faith and pride in themselves, Japan being a case in point, have the ability to grow. And I severely and strongly believe in that. Because, you know, if you are going to buy into the Western narrative, and that's a narrative I was brought up on, Anupamji. When I went to school, when I went elsewhere, you know, they would look at India as a country which is, you know, maybe to be pitied, if not despised, and you have a long way to go.
Well, we had people who were displaying India as a snake country of snake charmers and elephants and things.
Absolutely.
By the people in high positions.
Absolutely. Yeah. So then came along Mr. Atal Bihari Vajpayee, whom I have great respect. I had a privilege of knowing him for a long time. And we carried out the nuclear tests, which gave you a certain edge in terms of once you have a nuclear deterrence, people take you slightly more seriously. But then the last 10 years have been remarkable in terms of the kind of economic productive forces which have been unleashed. You see, government can only provide a small catalyst. They can provide some ideas. No matter which way you go in. And What used to happen is they used to say that there are several Indias out there. Mm. There is the affluent India, which is very well to do. And then there is a very poor India. Mm. I think what the Modi 10 years have succeeded in doing, and this realization is we have not been able to get that narrative across, is that he has said that good governance is also good politics. Mm. So, Sarvodaya to Antyodaya, and he's taken the fruits of development or the benefits of development to the poorest, to the farthest point, which was, by the way, the agenda of the Sustainable Development Goals 2030, which came into being, I think, in 2016. But Modi ji had already started in 2014, which means what? 4 crore Pradhan Mantri Awas Yojana. And I was saying build another 3 crore. If people didn't have cooking gas, he would give them cylinders. Ujwala, 10 crore, 28 lakh cylinders given under the Ujwala scheme. The metro system. Now, India is a country on the move. Today, our metro system is carrying 1 crore people, passengers per day. But today, our urban population is just over 30%. And we are 1.4 billion people, so 30%. By the time we do 50% of urban population, there'll be 800 million people living in India. So you will need an urban transport system. So the metro system in the next few years will be the second largest in the world. It'll overtake South Korea, Japan, and the United States, which is at 1,560 kilometers. The point I'm making is, it's not one thing. You bring an ecosystem, and today, look at this digital inclusion, financial inclusion, and the canvas covers all segments of society. I mean, look at the handling of the pandemic in and of itself. We are one country in the world which declared the lockdown quickly, also. Because if it's a choice between life and livelihood, you can't, to save livelihood, you can't risk lives. And then we came out of it also quickly. But result, all indigenously manufactured vaccines not only provided what something like 220 crore vaccine doses to people in India, almost free, but you also supplied to 100 other countries. So today, you are not only doing this, but what you're doing here, Anupam ji, is replicable on a larger scale in the global south, in Africa, in Latin America, even in parts of Central Asia, etc., and Central Europe also. So India has come up. You look at your automobile engineering. But more than that, I would say you come to the cutting edge technologies. When it comes to green hydrogen, we're at the cusp. So in all these areas, these are the three things: civilizational past, taking development now, and then embracing technology, digital, and all that with a religious fervor.
Wow. Amazing. Do you feel that India saved the West and the world from a huge economic meltdown in 2022?
Absolutely.
How?
You see, when the military operations took place, if you're talking about February 22, let's look at the hard facts. The hard facts are that the Russian Federation produced 13 million barrels of crude oil in a day. If you were, I mean, say hypothetically, if you were to take the position that there will be no imports or purchases from Russia, then it stands to reason that entire 13 million barrels which was being produced and consumed would have had to be purchased from somewhere else. Where was it would have been purchased from? From the other suppliers. So just imagine if those who were supplying, the global total was about 102 million barrels a day, you take 13 million barrels off, it is the other barrels, there will be a more pressure on that, which means the price would have shot up to 250, 300. So one popular misconception was that, people have said that you cannot buy oil from Russia. So I was one of those upfront, and I say that with great pride. I questioned, I said, wait a minute. What are we discussing? The oil which comes through a pipeline from the Russian Federation to Hungary is exempt from any such talk. The oil which goes in a pipeline from the Russian Federation to China is exempt. Sales from the Sakhalin to Japan and the Far East are exempt. So whom are this intended again? Then slowly everybody said, no, it's not that. It's just that you should buy. Then they imposed a price cap. I have been saying to a lot of my friends all over the world, I don't want to name any country. He said, you're buying so much. I said, well, I buy from whoever sells me at the most competitive price. Because my oil marketing companies, so they provide 19% of the country's total revenue. So they will issue a tender And they will say, we want this grade of oil. Anyone who wants to compete can compete in the tender. In February 22, our purchases of crude oil from Russia were only 0.2%. Only 0.2%. From today, last month, it was over 35, nearly 40%.
So why does it bother the rest of the world?
I don't think it does.
The West, it doesn't bother?
No, why? We are buying $20 billion from the US. Why? How come nobody mentions that?
So is that a diplomatic move or is that
need? It's a very need-based move. I have been saying, if you have a large farm in Latin America, large oil farm, and if you have suddenly find oil, let me know. And if you can provide it cheap, we will. So no, these things will go up and down. Our imports were largely from Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Kuwait, Iraq. Well, I think that keeps coming up and down. I don't think it's really bothering anyone. What they have, their problems, all right. They would say, I want us to buy oil at competitive rates. But that's an entirely different discussion.
Right now, the construction is underway for the new reactors in Kondarkulam. How important is this cooperation with Russia?
Very important. Very important. I can tell you, we've been through a very fascinating phase in our approach to energy. During the Manmohan Singh years, we had, you know, this desire, because nuclear energy ideally should be a source of providing a very significant portion of your requirements. We signed an India-specific safeguards agreement. We did all these things, etc. But then somehow it never took off. And there are a variety of reasons. Our Russian Federation cooperation has been exceptionally important. Our cooperation with the erstwhile Soviet Union in many fields, I mean, defense, you know, energy now, nuclear, etc., is extremely important and we greatly value it.
So what are India's key objectives for its engagement in the Arctic region in terms of energy?
Energy as defined in the broadest possible terms. Broadest possible terms, I mean, you look for whatever energy you can get, we can all, but today, you know, the new energy mix, you're going to be looking at rare earths, minerals, all that. So like any country, but you know, this is a game in which some countries got off the mark earlier, but I certainly believe that there's enough around everywhere. And there'll be rationalization. Production and supply lines will rationalize, and countries which have large markets, whoever has the resource will also need to sell to them. Now, for instance, if India were to stop buying, say, 5 or 6 million barrels a day, do you know how much of oil there would be, and where would be the alternate buyers? I mean, you have two large buyers today, China and India, and you have others. But, you know, with the advent of electric vehicles coming in, with the advent of other hybrids, biofuels coming in, green hydrogen, etc., the world is changing. But I still think for the foreseeable future, this kind of energy mix is something we will need to be anchored in for a while.
How does Hardeep Puri relax?
That's a very good question. The question may should be reframed. Why doesn't Hardeep Puri relax? so I mean, I'll be very frank.
You're a very relaxed person whenever I met
when
you.
When I'm relaxed otherwise, but no, by relaxed, I think you had a very positive construct on relax. It means just switch off, just switch off. Today, we've all become victims of technology. Before you sleep at 12:30 and 1 at night, you're looking at your messages. When you get up in the morning, first thing is you're looking at your messages. So I think taking a time off, well, that's not going to happen just now. Because you have a boss who's completely dedicated to work. I don't think he's taken a holiday in...
Did you want to say taskmaster?
That's up to you. I mean, he has a lot of people working for him. I don't think everyone shows or tries to respond like that. Look, he's older than me. I don't think I've heard him take a holiday ever. Yes. Even as Chief Minister of Gujarat, I received him in London, in Geneva when I was permanent representative. But the point is that I think one has to rationalize. But the last few months has been particularly hectic because it was not an 85-day election campaign. Actually, we were working in that election mode even for 6 months earlier. So I think that is it. But I hope to slow down. I think one needs to before.
I don't think you will slow down.
No, I think it's always a noble intent.
So do you read, do you watch a film, or do you listen to poetry, or do you listen to music?
I listen to music throughout the day. Okay. I mean, whether I'm in the car or even during meetings, I have music playing. And all the algorithms that have on there, that's playing all the time. when Lakshmi was here, I would invariably watch Netflix also. Mm. You know, what a movie. Both of us are, and both of us read quite a bit.
Thank you, Hardeep.
Thank you, Diana.
Thank you so much. And thank you for watching. Join me next week as we uncover a new layer in yet another debate. And let's talk Bharat. I'm Anupam Kher. Goodbye.